Where's that dang thing? There it is. What's up, George? What's going on in the House of Crease tonight?
In the House of Crease tonight, we have Mr. Keith Gleason, and we're going to be talking to him about his book, Mighty Mascots. It's coming up next.
Let's get it.
Show for independence all around, giving you a platform to spread your word all over town. Cast the Craze is the place to promote to your fans with the dream of Medina and Sam the Crazy Man. Subscribe to our show and never miss an episode. It's time to get your mats, listen to us on the go. Updated every week, we never miss a day. Join the squad, come on in, it's time to cast the Craze. If you are an independent, cast the Craze. Making moves on your own, cast the Craze. On your grind in the streets, cast the Craze. Join the movement, catch the craze!
Yeah, George, we did it again. Come on now. Yeah, you want to do it. Catch the craze. Welcome to Catch the Crease Podcast. I'm your host with the most, Sam the Crazy Man Vera, and I am with
George the Dreamer Medina. What's happening, everyone? Welcome to another exciting episode of Catch the Craze. We are live tonight. It is Tuesday, April 19th, and we're going to be talking to Keith Gleason. He has a book called Mighty Mascots from Alterna Comics. So he's going to be talking to us in just a few minutes. This was supposed to be a show. We're going to pre-record and air it later on, but, you know, it's live now. So if you haven't had the chance yet, please subscribe to the channel. Hit like, comment below, do all that stuff. Hit the bell so that you know when we're going live. We're actually going to have another show at 8 o'clock coming up.
Jiggling.
About an hour. That's right. But what's going on, Sammy? How you doing, brother?
Sam is busy, bro.
Busy.
Sam is busy getting ready for the expo. I've just been grinding. You know, 2 months time. There's a lot you have to get for an event like this. There's a lot that has to get done, right? And so when I put the list together, and I was like,
what event are you talking about? Because for those who don't know,
and now you know, and knowing's half the battle. G.I. Joe,
bam.
The Lightning Expo, D booth D104. That's where you'll find me. It's good. Oh yeah, I saw this. There are comic book publishers there. Dark Horse is there. Yeah, so this is a major undertaking because within, you know, when I booked it, I had 8 weeks to have pitch decks, marketing decks, press kits, samples of all the products, come up with the display for the booth. This isn't a, you know, this is a booth. This is a 10-foot by 10-foot booth that you walk into, have graphics for the walls. You can't use pipe and drape, none of that stuff. Everything has to be affixed to the wall or freestanding props. So the amount of work I've been grinding from, you know, 7 a.m. to midnight on every day. I took a break on Sunday, East Sunday to hang with my wife. Every day just been grinding. So yeah, it's a major undertaking. I'm excited about it. You know, I can't wait till I get there. So I've been working on that. You know, the Kickstarter campaign is fulfilled for this nailing in my toilet, all with the exception of one backer who never responded to their emails or the surveys. I sent emails, I sent surveys. So the package is there. So whenever they come out of slumber and they decide to remember that they actually backed this campaign and there's a reward, outstanding reward, it's already packaged. I just need you to hit me up with your address. But other than that, you know, just been grinding.
Yeah, no, I hear that, dog. I hear that. Got to do what you got to do.
Yes.
That's a big show. The licensing show. And for those who don't know what the licensing show is, that is an international show where, you know, people come in there to look for new things that are coming out, throw some licenses at them.
Yeah, basically, it's all of the new, everybody who has a property that they're looking to license, and every organization's acquisitions team, licensing agents, and they're there. So they're looking for new content, and they're actually presenting what's coming out in the next 12 to 24 months. So like new movies, new toy lines, all that stuff they'll be presenting there, but also they'll be looking for new talent as well. So that's where, you know, this is different from a, you know, you're not selling anything. You're trying to make deals.
Right. Yeah. And hopefully, you know, land a license that'll catapult you to the next level kind of thing, you know? So that's what that's about. So that's going down end of May.
The week before the launch of Designated in My Toilet, issue number 2. So, and then when I come back, we'll be launching this on May 31st. That's going to be dope. Yes, the week before that. And then, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, no, so sign up. Make sure you guys have signed up to that pre-launch page. Hit the notify me button so you know when it goes live on the 31st. We're going to have a show to launch the campaign on the 31st. So you'll see it there. But in case you forget, hit that notify me button so that you do get an email alert that says, hey, this thing is live. Get ready to, you know, support it. So yeah, make sure you follow that. The launch page is up now, and the link is in the show notes. So make sure you go down there and check that out. Hit that link and hit the notify me button.
And that week. What are you, like 20 days away from your launch?
15 days away from launch. Just a little over 2 weeks. So the campaign goes live May 4th, and it will actually go through to June 1st. Originally, I was going to end it, but you know we're not going to be here for that week where it'll end. So I extended it another week. So it'll end on June 1st. And that'll be the last day. So it'll be from May 4th to June 1st. That's how long the campaign will last. And if you haven't yet, please make sure that you sign up to the pre-launch page for that campaign as well. It's in the show notes. The link is down there. And thank you to everyone who's already let me know that they've signed up. Thank you for signing up. And I'm looking forward to it, man. 15 days to go. If you haven't done so yet.
90 signups. That's dope.
Yeah. If you haven't done so yet, please let me know you signed up, because I do want to send you a PDF of this guy right here. I have prints that I'm putting together for everyone who signs up. I will send you a PDF version of this in your email. And then if you do decide to pledge when the campaign goes live, then I will send you a printed copy of that bad boy with your pledge. Physical pledges only. So, but you know, as a thank you, and you know, you guys can go ahead and do some cool things, put it up in a frame, you know, do some cool stuff like that. I'm looking to get some of the some more prints up so that I can show it to you guys as it gets closer. But dude, it's 15 days away, man. I'm excited. The page is done. Cover's in for the book from the artist. So I'm going to be showing that off in the next couple of days. So stay tuned for that on my Instagram. Make sure you follow the Adventures of Wonderdale too, so you can check that stuff out.
Word up. Yeah. Word up.
Yes, sir. So yeah, so that's up, man. That's what's up. And coming up next, we're going to have Mr. Keith. Now, Keith is interesting because Keith is down with Alterna Comics, right? And so I want to talk to him about that journey of, you know, finding a publisher and getting his stuff out that way. Because you, as everybody knows who does this, it's very hard to do all of it. You know, the marketing, and getting the word out, selling these books, all of that stuff is very hard. It's a lot easier when you have a publisher that can kind of take care of some of that stuff. Not to say that once you find a publisher, you stop hustling, because you do have to continue the hustle. You know, I think that's a common mistake that people think, oh, I signed up with Image, they got me. Image, you actually don't get any money from Image until they cover their cost.
Word.
You know what I'm saying? So you got to hustle. You got to hustle. It is a hustle.
Every day you're hustling. Yeah, I mean, it's a grind. I think, but Keith's been doing it for a minute, and he also runs his own convention. So, you know, he has a podcast, he's a convention promoter, he's a comic creator, you know, he does it all, man. You know, he's the trifecta. So, you know, he's been hustling. So we're looking forward to that the chat with him. Yes. And you know, if you've missed the Crazy 10 or Less, which aired yesterday, you know, it's getting a lot of comments and a lot of views. Basically, the topic was, you know, do you really need to have boobs on your cover in order to sell your comic if your comic has nothing to do with sex or sexy babes? But, you know, you see a growing trend of, you know, indie creators just like, you know, I have to have a sexy cover in order to get backers. But when you open up the book, it doesn't look anything like what you see on the cover. The girls are actually fully clothed. You know, is that selling out? Are you just trying to make a buck, sell a comic, or are you trying to, you know, build a story and sell your story? So that was the topic. And so there's been a lot of feedback and a lot of chatter. And we'll continue that conversation on Thursday morning on episode number 10 of The Morning Brew with the Crazy Crew.
The dime. Yeah, man. We were talking about this with Sam. It's funny because, yeah, you know, like that kind of stuff, sexy covers, you know, sex sells, man. That's just what it is. Sex, violence, drugs, those things sell. They just are. It's just human nature we're attracted to that kind of stuff. It's so funny though. The irony is, you put up, you know, do you need curves to sell? And the word curves alone gets the views. It's just what happens. You know, it's natural. I think that yes, long. There are keywords, and that is a keyword. That's an image that will always sell, you know. So, yeah, we'll talk about some more of that on Thursday. It's going to be interesting discussion. Yeah. Let us know what you guys think. There's been some chat already on that actual video. So check that out.
Yeah, there has been some chatter. Was it desktop? Unfortunately, for my boy, Dudarius Uranius, I gave him boobies, and I shouldn't have. But, you know. For the sake of that, let me show you. It's for the sake of that conversation. Where is it? Where's my sheet? There it is. Bang. All right, here we go. For the sake of the conversation, I have to give my boy some. I said, what would happen if I did this to duty?
But that doesn't make sense because
I know. But hey, in today's world, it does.
Well, yeah, no, but I'm just saying, like, I think that the stuff that's on this, on the...
Yeah,
on the
but that's what I'm saying. Right. It doesn't make sense because it has nothing to do with it. That's what I'm trying to say. It's like, there are books that you see when you pick up, has nothing to do with a bodacious boob on the front of the cover, but they use that as a gimmick to sell the book. I'm saying is, if your book is selling sex, if your book's about having sexy girls, and of course, your cover's going to represent that, but if your cover should represent the crux of the story, and if that's not the DNA, if that's not the ingredient of the story, then why even do it? You know,
because it sells. That's why. But we'll continue. Well, listen. That's for the morning.
Are you selling? But are you really selling the book? Or are you selling that
you're,
art?
You're selling the book. They're buying the book.
Right, but you know, but do they want to pick up the book without the art?
Probably not, but that's why that's on the cover. The cover is going to sell the book, so they're selling the book. They are selling the book. They're using it to sell the book. It's similar to like when you know if you hired you know Todd McFarlane to draw your book to draw your cover, but he didn't draw the inside of the book.
Right.
But that cover by Todd McFarlane is going to sell.
Which is why I won't do it. Like for me, like
no, I get
you
it.
You know, it's like we had that conversation when there was a specific three mainstream independent artists that I wanted to commission to do a cover, then I decided not to. I said, I really want to sell the story. And so hopefully it'll be based on my art style, the story that people will enjoy. And then if it pops off down the road and it's very popular and then I get all these, you know, then that's different because now the story has an audience. But when I don't have an audience, I really want to attract the audience based on the merits of the story.
No, I know, but you, listen, there's so much to talk about on this thing, and we'll save some of this stuff for the show. Your ad really touched my heart. I'd love to buy the couch to help you reach your financial goal for 2 months. Okay, interesting. I like how you posted that on the page. Why would you
post it? I didn't even know what I was posting.
This dude is selling a couch to tickle your belly button. What is going on out there? Anyway, yeah, no. So tune in on Thursday morning. We will be live talking about curves and boobs and do they sell? Should they sell? Why are you selling them? you know, all that fun stuff. It's going to be cool. It's going to be good. It's going to be good stuff.
This is what happens. Is it midnight? Is it a full moon? What's up? I think it's a full moon. I saw a full moon this morning.
It's mad early, too.
Yeah. Oh, I saw a full moon during the day. Yeah. What's that song? Out at night. Yeah. So I see that our special guest has just arrived.
Do it.
So let's see. What I want to do. Let's see. Let's give a bump to our girls. And then when we come back, we're going to bring in our guests. So where are you, ladies? Here we go. Bump. What's up?
Hey.
Yes. What's going on, guys?
Welcome to the craze.
Wow, man. Listen, your show was actually going to be pre-recorded, and then I thought I had to go do some stuff. It turns out I didn't, and boom, here you are. You're live.
I like it. Go with us. Yeah, I like it. Why not, you know? Live, pre-recorded, we do it all, you know? How's it going, guys? What's going on?
Good, man. Good. How you doing?
Good, good. Can't complain. You know?
I love the Pac-Man and the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man behind you. That is dope.
Dude, this wall, if you could take my personality and make it a wall, this is it right there, you know?
That is dope. So I see you like a lot of like nostalgic stuff. Have you seen The Loud House?
The Loud House. That's a cartoon that's like a comic strip, right?
Yes. It is hilarious. But before we go into all that stuff, we want to know about you. What's up, Keith?
Hold on. Let's just introduce him to the audience first, guys. Welcome Keith Gleason on the show. Mighty Mascots is his book. And he's joining us today live. So go ahead, Sam. I'm sorry.
I was having Keith do it. So Keith, who are you? What do you do? Welcome to the race.
Thanks, guys. I like it. I like the backdrop there. Awesome. So I do a lot of things. Comic creating, running comic cons, you know, just and doing a show, you know, like you guys. Probably my passion is mostly in my comics, though. You know, like I have a comic series called Mighty Mascots. It's about a group of serial mascots brought to life by a 3D printing accident. And they decide to become like a superhero team, you know, total throwback to, you know, like 80s cartoons, 80s Marvel comics, that kind of stuff, you know, all ages, but not all ages in a YA sense, more in all ages in the way we grew up with comics, like Batman, the animated series, or, you know, like that, or Spider-Man from like the 80s, you know, that kind of thing, you know, where you could have stuff like Kraven's Last Hunt, you know, and it was still like considered like a kid title, you know what I mean? So that's sort of what Mighty Mascots is. It's a little tongue in cheek, but it's also kind of serious, you know?
Yeah. Did you now what came first? I know you do a lot of things.
The chicken or the egg.
Was it the comics? Was it the convention? Was it the show? Like, which one of those three things kind of came first for you?
Comics, definitely. Comics. I ever since I was a little kid, like I could draw a little bit too. I wanted to be a cartoonist growing up. Like I wanted to be like the next Charles Schulz, you know? So like, that's the kind of where my style is. It's very like Jim Davis, Garfield, or something like that, you know? But as I was growing up, I still love that stuff. And I would love to, if I had to do just comic strips for the rest of my life, I would love that too. But I kind of discovered comic books when I was in junior high. And then it was kind of like, whoa, you know, like we could do like longer stories, you know. It was right when comics were starting to get really cool in like the late 80s,
right?
When Watchmen and Dark Knight was hitting. that's when I was starting to collect. And yeah, you guys were there, so you guys know how your mind got blown away by like stories like this, you know. And I think I didn't make my first real comic book though until about mid 2000s, I think.
Oh, okay.
So I was always into it, like, but I, like I said, I was more like doing comic strips at the time. And then somewhere along the way, I finally decided to make a comic book, because like, you guys might remember this too, like before like 2005, it was kind of tough to put a comic book together, because you had to like finding a printer and like,
I was going to say that. Yep.
Yeah, like it was a daunting task to me. Like like you, when you're younger, you don't realize you can just pick up the phone and call a place and try to like put something together. But you know what I mean?
So, well, but, like, but then, but you would have had to do that humongous print run of like 3,000.
Yeah,
books,
right, you know right. What I mean? So like, you would who have had that money that. Back then?
It wasn't until print on demand that you actually were like, oh, yes. Wait a minute,
I can do this. That's when I started noticing it was in about the 2005 area where, print on demand became a thing, you know?
Yeah.
And at the time too, I was trained traditionally, so I didn't know Photoshop or Illustrator. I kind of learned that stuff with my day job back when I was working for a different company, like making logos and stuff. I started off in like sales, but then I kind of whittled my way over to the design portion without learning anything, like, and had them kind of teach me Photoshop and Illustrator. And that's how I kind of learned. Yeah, and then I had all those skills to kind of finally put a comic together, you know?
Well, so that's what happened. You had all those skills, and then you also had the sales background to be able to sell them.
Exactly. Like, I have that customer service background growing up too, worked in a lot of, you know, crappy customer service jobs. So, but you understand like that mentality when you talk to somebody. It's not like, you know, like you're hiding behind your sketch pad at shows or anything, you know, like, so I had all that background.
Is that how you met Johnny?
Yeah, actually Johnny, I met him for the first time at my first Comic-Con that I ever put together, which is kind of funny. Oh, nice. Like, I think we had crossed paths at one point, but we didn't, you know, like you meet like tons of people at shows, you know, I'm sure you guys are the same. Like, you have to meet somebody like five times before they make an impression on you or you remember their name, you know? Mm-hmm. That was kind of like me and Johnny, but like, I liked him instantly. Like, and like when we first met, like I like this kid. He's got it together, very positive. I think positive energy tracks positive energy, and then negative energy tracks negative energy, you know. So I think that's why me and Johnny work as like co-hosts and like, you know, just as friends, you know. So that was about, so we've only been friends for about 5-6 years now. Like, the first show I did was in like 2015 or 16, I can't remember now. That's where I first met him. It was just a small like show, you know, that we threw together. And I didn't want to be a con promoter, but I kind of took it upon myself because I didn't like what was going on in conventions, you know.
So Keith, real quick, before we even jump into the convention,
I want to talk about that too. Yeah.
So the Mighty Mascots, right? Boom. You create this book. Now, did you create it with the mindset of I'm also going to draw it and put it out, or did you always plan on hiring somebody to help you with it?
I always pictured it as hiring somebody to bring it to life, because I'm very limited in my art skills. Like, I wanted a superhero kind of look for it. And I have a hard time drawing like realistic superheroes, like, you know, in perspective and things like that. So I kind of knew I was going to hire out for the book. And I originally had, I originally created the book with, do you guys know Frankie B. Washington?
Yes.
I've heard. Yeah, didn't we have him on the show, Sam?
We had him on the show in the early days of Cast the Craze. He also did a duty drawing that day.
Yes. Oh, did he? Oh, that's cool. Yeah, oh, nice. Yeah. It's small world. Yeah. But I started the book with him, and he designed all the characters. And at the time, Mighty Mascots was... I was just self-publishing a lot of stuff, and I had started to do an anthology book, and it was like an anthology because, it was a bunch of different stories, but it wasn't a bunch of different creators. It was like me writing every story, and then hiring different art teams for each story. And one of the stories was Mighty Mascots. And I did two chapters of that, which was like 16 pages with Frankie. And what happened was, as I was doing that book, like that book was starting to get like some attention just from fans and things like that. Oh, we really like this idea. It's really cool. And I kind of liked it too, because I felt it was very original. Like I hadn't seen anything anywhere like where like, serial mascots were like superheroes or something, Cool. Yeah. Like I heard there was a comic called like, there was like a web comic about the real serial mascots at some point. I forget the name of it. It was like called like Serial Killers or Breakfast of the Gods or something like that.
Right.
And that was the only thing I had ever heard of that had, like serial mascots. But I guess in that web comic, it was more like a murder mystery or something. But so that's why I kind of felt very confident about the title. And that's when I started shopping it around to small publishers. Mm-hmm. I sent stuff to Image. I sent it to Dark Horse. You name it, whatever small publisher was around. And then I hadn't even thought of Alterna at the time, but like I think about a year after I was done shooting that all around, I was just going to do it myself and keep putting it out myself. Pete started that. I don't know if you guys know Pete. He's the guy that runs Alterna. He started doing the newsprint stuff, and I was like, oh, that is brilliant. No one's doing like newsprint, And I love that you could get a whole like 24 page book for like $1.50 at the time.
Yeah,
you know?
It was cheap.
It's insane, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was like, let me pitch to Alterna and see if they'll take the book. And
how many books did you have? Like how many issues did you have in the,
I only had, the two 8 page stories that me and Frankie had done.
Wow.
And, I don't know if you ever look at his submission guidelines on the Alterna website, but he only wants to see 8 pages. So perfect. I was like, well, here's all 16, and I sent all 16 off. And he came back and he's like, I like this, but this is the stuff I don't like about the story. And he gave me like all these pointers about what he didn't like. And he turned, after I redid everything, he was 100% right. Like what I was doing in those early storylines is kind of like what the Transformers movies do. Like, you have this movie about Transformers, but the movie is focused on the human characters and not the Transformers, which you really want to see. That's what I was kind of doing with my early mascot stories. I had it focused on the human characters, and the mascots were like kind of in the background. And what his biggest note was, these guys are your stars, not, You got to put them in cast, front and center. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, you're right. So I went back, and then this is where me and Frankie kind of fell apart, is like Frankie didn't want to redraw the entire thing again, with a new script. And I don't blame him, because if someone handed me the same thing, I was like, no freaking way am I doing that. So I started looking for another artist, and that's where I found Ian on Facebook. And Ian's just like phenomenal talent.
Yeah.
Really quick, just a great, great artist. And I love his like manga-esque kind of style too. I resubmitted it with him, and then it got accepted the second time.
Wow.
And the rest is history,
That's awesome, man. And then how many issues are you in now?
I I'm done 6 issues. I'm about to start 7, 8, and 9. I'm going to be launching the next campaign in July.
All right.
So I don't even have the pre-launch up yet. I got to do that soon, probably this week or next, just to get something going. I know I need to get a couple months ahead of the actual campaign, you know? So.
Yeah. Are you putting it on Kickstarter or Indiegogo? Or
I'll probably do Indiegogo. I did really good on Indiegogo with my, I've done both platforms. I find Indiegogo better though.
Really?
And I think it's because I like, and you guys have both done Kickstarters, you know, like at the end, you know, like you often get ghosted, you know, what by people, and you lose a lot of money at the end. Was when they come to collect that money, sometimes about 10% of those people aren't there with their credit cards, you know. So I like that Indiegogo, when you buy something, you got to buy it right then and there, and the money's taken out immediately, you know. I like that so much better. And then I also like, I like the in-demand part of it, you
after
know,
the
so
campaign's over.
Yeah, I love that you can keep it open for. It functions as like an online store in a lot of ways, you know, after the fact. My last campaign, when I went in demand, I would have left. Let me see, probably about $5,000 on the table.
Wow.
If I didn't go in demand. Yeah, no, it's
because
I stayed open probably about 4 or 5 months after the campaign closed and like, you know, continue to make money after that. So
good for you. How did you build that fan base on Indiegogo? Because I feel like that's probably one of the hardest things also is just, I mean, in both platforms, I would say, it's just building that fan base. What did you do to kind of get that going? Was it because it's linked to Alterna, you think? Is that
I think so. Like I had like, because, you know, I already had the 3 issues out in stores. This was when Alterna was still distributing with Diamond. They kind of left Diamond like 2 years ago and they haven't looked back. But I was like the last, my 3 issues were like some of the last ones to go to stores, you know, before they ended their relationship with Diamond. So I had somewhat of a fan base growing because of that. And, you know, just, I went on a ton of YouTube shows, I don't know. It was a lot of factors, and I was shocked at by how well it did.
That's,
you know,
good though, yeah.
But yeah, no, and I think because I have the convention too, I know a lot of people there that you know, artists and writers. I know most of the vendors that come to my show are supportive and things like that. So I think everybody was kind of like, oh, you know, because I don't normally run a lot of campaigns. I've only done maybe about 3 or 4. But now they're kind of becoming more and more necessary, I think, with, you know, the more books you produce. Like, I think they're kind of a cornerstone of your business now, you know? So,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm thinking of looking to do maybe 1 a year, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. How does that work with a publisher now? Like, so, all right. So you have your creator-owned project, right? It's Mighty Mascots. It's being published through Alterna. Yeah. And you're doing a crowdfunding campaign for it. Does Alterna now says, hey, I'm going to need a little kickback from those books? Or is it just like, hey, it's your book?
No, he's supportive about like us doing campaigns to raise the money to create the books.
Oh, okay.
And then like he almost looks at when he puts them out through Alterna, it's like almost like a secondary life for your books.
Mm-hmm.
So he's very hands off. I mean, he does like us to promote, like he looks for creators that are don't have any drama in their lives, and like, you know what I mean, and they're like excited about their books and things like that. Like he looks for people like that, you know.
Good.
And then he looks for a good product on top of that, so I guess I fit that bill a little bit, you know. So
good.
But
it's perfect. That's perfect. It works.
Yeah, no, I love that he lets us do that, and he doesn't want to cut. Like he'll take a cut when it comes out through Alterna, but when we do our own campaigns, we can offer other things to fans that necessarily couldn't get through Alterna, like t-shirts of the Mighty Mascots or with this new campaign, I'm looking at doing like custom pirate eye patches with like Honey Flakes' logo on the eye patch. I think that could be kind of fun, you know?
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, so that's stuff you couldn't get, you know, through Alterna, but you can get through me as a creator, you know?
Yeah, no. Big shout out to Hero2567, who we know is as a Hero Rodriguez. He's a really good artist. And he said, loving the big dude with the screen for a head on Mighty Mascot. who is that character? Who is the?
Oh, he's talking about Boom. So, yeah, so they're all kind of like archetypes or, yeah, loosely based off real serial mascots. So, like, get the pirate, Captain Honey Flakes, who's, you know, kind of like Captain Crunch. The Martian is a real deep cut. It's from this cereal right here called Quisp. I don't know if you guys can see that.
Yeah, okay.
It's an old school cereal. the alien's name's Mondo. He's from that. And then we have Boxer Bear, who's kind of like a combination of like Sugar Smacks and like Tony the Tiger or something like that, you know. And then the three robots, Whack, Smack, and Boom, are kind of like alliteration, like the Rice Krispie guys, but they're more like they're like their own thing, but they kind of form into a giant robot too. So it has that little bit of the Voltron kind of, you know, action in there. And then you have the Kool-Aid Man, who's sort of like the called Brewster McPunch. He's sort of like their Flash or the goofy character, you know, that always making jokes and things like that, you know. So it's very fun. Like it's fun to write. It's fun to come up with their villains and their storylines, things like that, you know. So
Your storylines every three issues, you have a new arc. Is that how it's working for you? Or
that's what I started doing. Yeah. And then I, you know, so it started off as a mini series first, because what I don't know if you guys are familiar with Diamond, like what they do is they, you know, constantly have like huge number one numbers, but then like when you get into number two, the book they dips. You know, the numbers start to dip, and then three and four, and then it goes down and down and down. So Pete was doing every alternate title as a mini series to sort of game that system a little bit. So you'd have a three issue story, you'd sell it through, and then you start with a new number one, and it would, the numbers would go back up again, you know? So he was treating it like a mini series. But then when we pulled away from Diamonds, it was like, well, you guys can be ongoing, and then you can either do single issues, you can do, you know, however long storylines you want, you know? So I'm looking to do like more like one and dones and maybe two parters and things like that. And then maybe build up to a bigger storyline, you know?
Yeah.
But I can only like realistically produce maybe three a year, you know?
Yeah.
You guys know, it's like a lot of work making a comic, you know? Yeah.
Forget it. It's incredible. So now, all right. So you have your comic. Now what came next? To promote it, did you do the convention and then the show, or did the show become before the convention? What happened next?
Okay. Yeah. The convention actually happened next, and that was around 2015. I was just, like I was saying to you guys earlier, I was kind of disgusted with the way Comic-Cons were going away from comics. Like it was all, everything but comics was, you know, what I was saying for a while. Excuse me. Like, it just seemed like everything was like cosplay, celebrities, you know, just everything but. So all my artist friends, we started noticing like that in around 2015. And we're just like, everyone was just bummed out. Like, you know, no one's making money. And, you know, there wasn't any show, just comics anymore. So I was like, you know what? Let me look in to see how hard it is to do one of these things, you know, cause like I had the background in customer service and I was a man, I've had management jobs. So I felt like I could manage the con. It was just like the little things you don't think about. Like if I rent a place, like is the fire marshal going to shut me down, or, you know, things like that, like that I didn't know. And shout out to Mitch, who runs Terrificon up in Connecticut. Like I've known him for years before he even did a show. He was just doing podcasts like us. And I just knew him from there. And I just called him up and I was like, Mitch, boom, boom. What is all this? Like, how, you know, what will happen if I do this and this? He gave me all the answers.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, it was great. Awesome. And I was like, so let's try it. And that's, so we did. We did 1 year. We did like a VFW, like old school, you know, about 40 tables. And it was a phenomenal.
And it was just artists. Just comics. It was just comics.
Just comics, artists. Yep. And we just advertised the crap out of it. And then we did free admission because it was so small.
Right.
And I mean, the whole town of Leominster showed up. Like, the mayor came to the show. It was like nuts. Michael.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like, wow, you know, like, if we do another year, I got to find a bigger place. I mean, it was that jam-packed.
Damn, that's awesome, dude.
Yeah, and it was everybody that took a chance on the show. You know how first-year shows are just kind of, like, usually suck. But everybody that took a chance on me was, like, unbelievable. Like, they people were making hand over fist money. Like, it was nuts. Like Joe St. Pierre, I don't know if you guys know Joe St. Pierre. He does Spider-Man back in the day. Mm-hmm. He had like five stacks of trades like this high. By the end of the show, they were all gone. I was like, oh my god, dude. You know, that's incredible. Like freaking crazy, like the amount of money people were making. Like, we even set up and we made like better money than I had seen in a show, and you know, since like the New York early days, you know.
Yeah.
And so the next year we were like, we gotta find a bigger space. So we moved to a hockey rink, and that's where the show's kind of been ever since. So we take the ice out of the hockey rink, and then we just put, you know, 100 tables down there, and then we have some upstairs and the, you know, where the admission is, and yeah, it's nuts. And
what's the name of the show for those watching?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's Plastic City Comic Con. This will be our fifth year, I think. Mm. Yeah, it's crazy. And
you had to take a break during the pandemic. Obviously, they all did, right?
Yes.
When did you guys actually come back?
this coming July is us coming back. So like, we've been off the last 2 years. When we finally return, people will just be like ecstatic again, you know? I'm looking forward to it.
You know?
Yeah, definitely. And then I wasn't even looking to do like a YouTube show or anything. And it kind of just fell into my lap during the pandemic. Yeah. Like, two things were happening. Like, I had launched the campaign, and then I was looking for other ways to promote my stuff, Mighty Mascots. And then I was like, Johnny, you know, I was like, hey, Johnny, if I do a show, do you want to like come on and talk? You know, we can talk to guests and stuff. And he's like, yeah, I'll do it. He's like, he didn't want to do any of the work though. He was like, he's like, if you set up everything, I'll just show up and we can do the show. And I was like, totally fine. Yeah, let me do it. Because, you know, with the pandemic, we had like endless time to do other things. So I was like, it made sense to start the YouTube show, and that's what we did, you know, and it's been going well. Like, I think once it becomes part of your daily routine, I imagine this is part of with you guys too. It just becomes another thing you do during the day. You know what I mean? So once we got into that pattern, now it's been good. It's been going strong since whenever we started it a month into the pandemic. So when was that? Two and a half years ago at this point or something like that.
You may be going, you said 2 months into the pandemic. So in May, you may be coming up on your 2 year anniversary.
Yeah. It's freaking nuts.
So for those who don't know, he's talking about Indie Comics Relay, which is a show that Keith and Johnny C do. And you guys do it every Wednesday or every second Wednesday, or what's your
schedule? We started with a bi-weekly schedule because Johnny's like, you know, we're gonna run out of people to talk to in like 2 months. And I'm like, yeah, you're probably right, because originally I wanted to go weekly, and so we started doing the bi-weekly schedule, and here we are. We have people booked out until like July right now, so it's been like the word got out, and then we haven't had any slowdown with guests. It's like crazy, you know? But we're still trying to keep that bi-weekly schedule, because I find that when we take a week off and we finally come back to YouTube, me and him are kind of like, yeah, let's go. You know what I mean? Like, there you go. Let's do it. Yeah, you're ready to take it on, you know, like a wrestling match or something, you know.
That's awesome, man. We're missing Michael San Martino is a longtime listener of the show.
Oh, he, yeah, hey Mike.
Great dude. He's got a book himself. And we're missing a lot of, he's a jokester. So we're missing a lot of his good jokes over here. He's going in about the minute you mentioned the ice skating rink, he said, you should keep the ice, Comic-Con on ice, skate into deals, Comic-Con on the rocks, drink, skate, and buy comic books. Like now he's just
so you flowing. Know that he had one of those pop-up shops in Harlem.
Oh, did he really?
You know, like Crazy Eddie.
Oh, really? How long did it last for?
I don't think he really did. I think so.
He's just busting his chops.
Oh, gotcha. Oh, well, you never know, right? It's like
those you know what? Mike might have had that.
I wanted to comment on something. I noticed that your covers have almost like a DuckTales feel to it, with the colors and the way the characters come at you. Was that purposeful, or was it just something that just evolved?
I think it just evolved. Like I never, like, it's funny with Ian, like, I never gave him any instructions on what to do. He brought a lot of fun stuff to the book though. Like, I know, like, when you decide to work with an artist, you always set up front, like how do they want to work? Like, you have that discussion if they like to break down the script, or, you know, if, they work off thumbnails, things like that. And that's what Ian likes to work off thumbnails. He doesn't like to break down the script. So, but then with that being said, he actually adds a lot to, like, I'll send him thumbnails. And like in the first issue, to give you an example, there's like two thugs at the very beginning of the book that go and, you know, basically start this whole thing off by, you know, dumping like a chemical into like the store sprinkler system. And they're just, I just wrote that they're just two random thugs. And then Ian came back to me. He's like, what if I drew them like the Wet Bandits from like Home Alone? And I was like, absolutely perfect. So if you look at the first issue, the two thugs in the beginning are basically Harry and whatever the other guy's name from Home Alone. So I was like, that's really fun, you know, and it was added perfectly to the comic, you know. So yeah.
I totally get you, man. When it comes to writing these stories, there's so much fun to write because you become a kid writing these stories, you know. It's like these adventures, and they're so easy to write at that point.
There is, like, so yeah, like if you grew up with this stuff when we did, I think like it just makes it so much easier to write because you kind of emulate what you grew up with in a lot of ways. And like, not necessarily copy, but like you kind of write, you know, I don't want to say it, like similar kind of stories. Like, you know, like I'm channeling, like, you know, like Spider-Man that I grew up with, like in the 80s, like, you know, whenever I write superhero stuff, like I love the, you know, like the soap opera elements and like, you know, the heroic stuff though too, you know, like just the stakes, you know, coming up with like the cliffhanger endings and things like that. I love that stuff, you know.
I can also see the popcorn character from Grease. That's Stalin.
Yeah, right. You
see where all the influences come from.
It's one of those things where like it becomes so much easier to write that way because it doesn't take itself too seriously. You're not, you know what I mean? Like, it's just a fun story. You're going to go in there and you're going to enjoy it. And that's it. Take it for what it is.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I agree 1,000%. And that's why it's like, I have a hard time connecting with some of the modern comics today. Like, they're either really too serious or they're just not fun comics. Like, you know, like, you read a book where it's like two talking heads for 20 pages sitting in a diner talking about something. And it's like, why? It's like, was this a rejected Netflix script or something? You know what I mean? Like, it just, some of this stuff, it feels like, you know, like somebody
trying to pitch to a network. And so there's a template that everyone's using and you see a lot.
Yes. Definitely. And like, you know, people write like just like crazy over the top stuff anymore, you know? And that's what I love, you know? Like, yeah. I love superhero battles. Like, no one writes action anymore, like in comics, yeah. Like, you know, yeah. Dr. Doom and Mr. Fantastic talk it out now, you know? It's just like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't know. It's not the yeah. same.
Nah, yeah. It's true, man. It's true. But Keith, when is your next convention? The Plastic City Comic Con. When it's in July, right?
July, yeah, July 16th. It's a 1-day show. We've been struggling with, like, people are like, oh, I should go 2 days, and I don't know. It's like one day's just work, you know. Yeah. Like yeah. I'm sure you guys have a preference too, right? I mean, 1 days are great because people come in and they have to spend all their money in that 1 day. There's no like, you know, spreading it out over the entire weekend. And there's right. no like, I'll be back on Sunday. Back
tomorrow.
Never come back. You guys, how many times you heard that? We'd be millionaires if we could yeah. monetize are you the that weekend? Statement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah. yeah. Yeah. But I love the 1 day shows because there's, you know, they come in and buy and then that's it and you go home that night. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
The problem I have as a promoter though with 1 day shows is that if you wanted to bring like a big guest in, you can't really because a lot of them don't want to fly in for 1 day, you know, like right. if you got somebody coming in from California, it's like, oh God, it's like, you know, I don't know if I want to come in for 1 day, you know? So yeah. like sometimes I'll try if I bring in, not unfortunately not at the moment, but
right.
put an application in on the website. There might be stuff that opens up last minute, you know.
Yeah.
It's really my yeah. waiting list is small,
I think I'm on 4 waiting lists.
Are you really?
Yeah. But they're all in Texas. They're all in Texas, right? Texas, like they filled up months in advance.
You got to go like almost a year ahead. It's yeah. crazy. Like,
yeah, you have to reserve your spot because everybody's trying to get a table now.
Yeah, it's true. Like because cons are coming back. I did a couple the last few weeks and they've been fantastic. People are ready for them again. Yeah, you know,
I heard and it, like
Wicked, better than last like year.
What's Wicked that? Comic Con was one of those that did really well.
Wicked.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Wicked was amazing. Like I was a little worried about it. Cause like a week out before the show, they were like, hey everybody, can you promote that you're going to be at the Comic Con this weekend? And I'm like, isn't that your job? Like, you know, I was a little worried about that. And then, but we went in and it was gamebusters. So
all right. We can go all night with you, but we have another guest coming up soon, but we want to give you the spotlight. Oh, okay. I want you to tell people how to reach you. When's your next campaign? And where can they, what websites and social handles?
Oh so, yeah, definitely. Well, I'll give you, so recklesssidekick.com is my main website for my comic stuff, or heroenvy.com. I think both of those URLs will go to the site. That's where you can pick up all my social media stuff. I'm pretty active on Twitter and a little bit on Instagram and Facebook, but anywhere you could follow me there. And then for the Comic-Con, it's plasticcitycomiccon.com. And we have a link on the Reckless Sidekick site and all that stuff too, as well. Yeah, that is about it. The campaign's coming in July. I'll probably have a pre-launch page up in the next couple of weeks. This is for Mighty Mascots 7, 8, and 9. So sweet. Check that out.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Keith, you know what? You know, you guys are always welcome on the show. You guys.
Same.
That's amazing. I love the same things that you love. That stuff is great.
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
Yeah, no, success to you and your campaign and to your event. And whenever you guys want to come on and promote something, just hit us up.
Yeah, same.
Sweet.
Goes in both directions.
All right. Thank you so much, bro. We'll talk soon though.
Yeah, definitely. All right, thanks, good seeing you guys again.
You too, buddy. Thank you. Take care.
All right, so that was Keith Gleason, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes because we will be talking to Russ Allen from Russ Explode as he launches his campaign for Kit Kat and Piggy Girl, Cat Cat and Piggy Girl, which is launches on Kickstarter tonight, and he'll be launching that on Catch the Craze. So join us at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time as we do that. And with that said, Thank you, Hector, and the Mike for showing up, and the crazy dude that started off soft in the beginning. But with that said, I'm saying the crazy man, Vera.
Towards the dream of Medina. See you in a few.
And we are out. It's just easy, did us not.
Crazy. Acquiesce.
No, I was talking about my friend Acquiesce. I met him.
Say my name.
Right?
This is what you were thinking?
Oh, you are listening to Catch the Craze. Listen, I'm the...
What? Catch the Craze. You're listening to Catch the Craze. You're listening to Catch the Craze. You are listening to Catch the Craze. On Catch the Craze.
You're listening to Catch the Craze.